Welcome to the Image Doctors. It is December 22nd, 2006, in sunny Colorado.
Yeah, with a lot of snow on the ground, though.
After 2 days of blizzard, we're finally back here to join you guys at Nikonian's Podcasts. I'm Jason O'Dell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Thanks again for giving us a listen, and we apologize for not being here a couple of days ago when we thought we would be.
Yeah, we were admittedly recording the podcast a little bit toward the last minute, which normally we don't do, but then we got hit by a truly nasty blizzard here in Colorado that pretty much shut everything down and had me trapped in the alternate command bunker, you know, while Jason was here at the mountain lair, so couldn't record.
Yeah, it was pretty tricky going. When you can't see the hood of your own car when you're driving, you know it's time to get off the road.
Yeah, I had a special time driving in my Jeep, you know, complete whiteout at times and stuff. Pretty bad.
And I'm from Florida, so you can imagine how much fun I had.
But it is nice and sunny out there, blue sky.
And the snow is already starting to melt off my driveway,
quickly.
So I don't have to shovel it.
Yeah, good stuff.
Well, we've got a bunch of little topics to talk about this week, and this is our last podcast, I believe, of 2006.
Yep.
So what we want to do is we're going to talk a little about some things we've done. We've installed the CS3 beta. Mm-hmm. We want to talk a little bit about third-party lenses. We want to spend most of our time talking about choosing a bag.
Right.
Choosing bags, which bags are right, and why you can't
have
just one.
And it probably is plural, yeah.
Yeah, why you can't have just one. We'll give you our tip of the month, and then we try to come up with some New Year's resolutions from the Image Doctors for 2007.
Yep, things that we're going to try to do this next year.
So,
photographically.
Photographically speaking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know buy more stuff for my wife is always number one on my resolution list.
This is in case she's listening to the podcast.
Right. Yeah. Honey, okay. If you're out there, my resolution is to buy you more toys.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. But we wanted to start with a little bit of news.
Yeah.
And thought you could lead us off on that one, Rick.
Well, unfortunately, one of the things is a sad thing, actually. Bruce Fraser, whose books we've mentioned several times in previous podcasts, passed away here recently. If you recall, Bruce was the author of the book on sharpening that we mentioned several episodes back. It was certainly a good source material for us in doing that podcast, as well as some other things. And, you know, very famous for his Real World series on Photoshop and things related to
I've read the Real World Color Management.
Yeah, also a very good book on Adobe Camera Raw.
Yeah, you know, that's ACR. One of the best ones.
Right. So we did want to note that, certainly a loss in the photographic world.
And let's see.
Moving on to a somewhat related thing.
Yeah, CS3 beta.
Right.
We don't have much to say about it at this point.
Yeah, both of us have downloaded it,
but
started
there.
Using it. Yeah, at least preliminarily, I've liked what I've seen. It's still buggy, and that's fair since it's a beta product. So, you know, be prepared if you do that. There are a few nasty things that you can run into, and it's not something that you should depend on at this point. But there are some very nice features in there that I think will prove to be good. ACR has a bunch of new things in it, many of them coming out of what Adobe's done with Lightroom. So it's some additional controls, things like vibrance, fill light, some things to handle.
I tried it a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of tabs. There's still a lot of controls, but some of them are a little bit more intelligently thought out.
Well, I think it's pretty good. I have a much easier time getting results that I like with it, and I think it's going to be a very good product in the end. Bridge has got some very nice updates that make it much more usable. Some nice things for, you know, zooming in easily using loop features and multiple images, performance is improved, a bunch of different things. And we'll save the rest for later. Right.
Well, the biggest thing from my perspective is that this runs natively on Intel Macs. So I downloaded the 600 and something.
It was huge.
It was enormous. And I tested it out. And I haven't really done a lot of head-to-head comparisons, but I have a new Mac Pro that I've been using with the Quad Xeon processors. And running CS2, I did a quick down and dirty benchmark. I took a D2X file that I had made a TIFF from and opened it in CS2 running under the emulator, the Rosetta, and did Smart Sharpen, which is one of the more tedious field. Not tedious, but it takes a while.
Right.
There's a progress bar that it requires tangible progress, and I timed it. And to do my smart sharpen on this full res D2X file, it took CS2 about a minute and 15 seconds. I did the same thing in CS3, and I didn't have time to use the stopwatch.
Whew.
It occurred in under a second, in under half a second. So
that seems
fast.
Like a good improvement.
That's I don't know what fold improvement that is, but that's a lot.
And you're positive it did sharpen the image.
Yeah, I checked. Because at first I thought maybe it didn't do it. Now, maybe this is because it's a bug and it's still beta software. I don't know. But even if the performance were half that, it would still be tremendous. Yeah.
I think the key thing is it looks like a very nice release. You know, and of course it'll have other features in it as it gets closer. I don't think it'll actually be released until the spring sometime. But it looks like a very worthwhile upgrade if you're currently
already using
Photoshop
CS2.
User. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to get it.
Of course, we don't know what the price is, or at least I don't know what the price
but
is.
No, but usually they're...
About $200 usually. Is
or a little bit less even, something like that.
Okay. So when we spend more time with that, hopefully we'll have a more in-depth
review. Yeah, but it does have some cool features.
Yeah, it's looking pretty good, actually. Yeah. Okay. What did you wanted to talk a little bit about third-party lenses.
Yeah, I thought it would be good.
You know, it's the holidays. People are still out there looking for something. I know maybe you just spent everything you can on getting, a D80 or something, and you wanted to get another lens, and you're just not sure if you want to pay the price for a Nikon lens. Or there's really a couple reasons why you get a third-party lens.
Right.
One is that it's cheaper, and two is because some of the third-party lenses come in flavors that Nikon doesn't make.
Right.
And so you can get some really interesting options for focal lengths from the third-party manufacturers out there.
Right. Sometimes preceding, Nikon offering something in an equivalent focal length, the really wide-ranging zooms are a good example of that, where it was quite a while before Nikon offered something like an 18 to 200 or a 28 to 200 or, all of those kind of things. And sometimes some clever things like the Sigma 30mm 1.4 DX type lens, which, there really is an equivalent in the Nikon line, and several others. But, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it was, sometimes there's a bit of a stigma with these lenses.
Not to be confused with a Sigma.
Right, yeah. There shouldn't be a stigma with Sigmas. And I don't think that's really fair. Many of these lenses are very good optically, actually.
Yeah.
There's often not a huge difference between them and the equivalent Nikon lenses. I will say that generally, if you're getting a Nikon lens, you're going to get a good lens, and one that's going to be very compatible with your cameras, and it's not too likely that you'll have a problem with some new feature down the road. But the third-party lenses are very, very good optically. Just like when we tested out the super wide lenses last year and did an article on the website for it. I think we covered it in the podcast too. The Nikon lens edged the others out optically, but boy, it was close. I mean,
and it depended on what focal
so close
you're
it didn't
at.
Really matter a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah,
it really truly didn't. I think you ended up getting the Sigma after
right,
trying.
Now there's
those
a case
out.
Where those are 2mm of focal length that Nikon doesn't make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a
so
nice lens.
A rectilinear. I have the 10.5 fisheye Nikon, but that's a fisheye lens.
It's a very different animal.
And if you wanted a rectilinear, rather than defishing the fisheye, I'd rather just use the 10 on the Sigma.
Yeah.
And get it, or something like that.
Yeah, and I was looking for a roughly equivalent focal length for my son, and prior to doing the test, I had bought him the Tokina 12-24, and he's still extremely happy with that lens. I mean, it's very, very good.
I guess if you're, want to make some generalization, because there's a million third-party lenses.
Yeah, and you have to get down to specific lenses to really come up with anything valid.
In terms of generalizations, all of the manufacturers, Nikon included, sort of have their consumer-grade lenses and then their pro-grade lenses. Sigma especially, Tokina, and I believe Tamron, has a specific pro line. But
SP.
The SP, okay, yeah. That's right. So like Sigma has an EX series of lenses. These are going to be built better, more rugged. A lot of times we'll have the HSM motor, the equivalent of the AFS focusing motor.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes faster apertures.
Right, F2.8s or whatnot. I believe Tokina has the ATX series, right, which is sort of their pro build lenses. I know they make like a 300 at 2.8,
right,
that kind of thing. So you're gonna, when you get those already, you're gonna be getting a more a higher quality product than just the average, you know, go into the local store and see what's there. Because a lot of times your local camera store will only carry the consumer grade lenses because that's what they sell more of. They're cheaper. So if you're buying a $100 lens, you got to understand that you're buying a $100 lens, and there's not that many good $100 lenses from any of these manufacturers. They're not bad, but another generalization is that the macro lenses from these manufacturers tend to be excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, all the way around, I've heard great things about Tokina's got a, or the Tamron has a 90 millimeter macro that's supposed to be outstanding. I used to use a Sigma 105 macro that was absolutely cut yourself sharp with.
Yeah, and back in the early to mid 90s, I used a Tokina 90 millimeter macro lens. It was a manual focus one, and it was just absolutely outstanding.
So, you know, if you're looking to save a few bucks on a macro lens, you're not going to really be compromising too many things with the third party. Let's see, what else can I think of?
Some of the things that can play into a decision, though, that you ought to look at before you go with a third party lens is filter sizes. There's a lot of virtue in having your main lenses share a certain filter size. For example, right, most of the ones that I have and use a lot, and same with yours, are 77 millimeter
right
filter sizes. And that's really nice to only have one set of filters and not have
especially
to mess with step-up rings, step-down rings,
yeah,
all that kind of junk.
It was a really nice day when I said my collection was pretty much rounded out with all 77 millimeter
right
threads.
Yeah.
So the different manufacturers sometimes have different...
Right.
Different
and sometimes you'll see a little bit different color balance with lenses from different manufacturers, mainly because of the coatings that are used. And so some can be slightly cooler or slightly warmer. Generally within the Nikon lenses, they're pretty consistent. And that's not a huge thing, especially with digital cameras and, you know, white balance features and stuff. But, you know, it's not a bad thing.
No, it's just something to have in the back of your mind. But it's really more important if you're doing, you know, product photography and changing lens. You want to have a consistent color cast to your
right
to your lineup so that you can streamline your workflow. But, I mean, we're really nitpicking there.
Yeah.
Because it's not an issue.
No, and most of my lenses are Nikon lenses, but I'd have no hesitation getting one of those three brands that we talked about if there was a specific lens that was unique and met my needs.
Now, if it's a brand that you haven't heard of or we haven't mentioned, it doesn't mean that it's not good, but just be more wary. Because a lot of times there's other third parties that will then produce lenses that get branded.
Especially store brands.
Store brand lenses. You know, I think Ritz Camera in the USA does, they have their own brand, and I don't know who makes it.
I think Sigma.
Sigma or Tamron.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's been both at times.
The other thing to be careful for is if you've recently purchased a D80, or not a D80, excuse me, a D40, then you're not going to have autofocus with the third-party lenses unless it's, and my guess is, and I'm guessing here, but a Sigma HSM lens would probably work with a D40 because the D40 doesn't have a screwdriver motor. So that would be something.
Right.
But we're assuming that, you know, most of us have one of those other bodies right now that... that would accept any of the autofocus. Sigma is the only one that makes any kind of equivalent of a AFS motor.
Right.
I don't see that in any of the other guys for right now.
Right.
Sigma's also come out with their form of VR, but they only have one lens with it, and I don't know. We maybe see some more of those in the future.
Yeah, it seems to me that they announced another one, but I could be incorrect on that.
Yeah, I haven't looked lately.
Yeah, but they haven't done too much with it so far.
But if you stick with the pro end lenses from those manufacturers, you know, I think you're going to be doing well. If you're looking for a budget lens, they make okay ones. I mean, there's good ones too, but there's also equally good Nikon lenses that are budget lenses. They've come out with a ton of those two. So
yeah, I think the most important thing is give yourself an opportunity to test it out with your camera and make sure you try it in a bunch of different modes, because there are some compatibility issues out there. Those seem to show up a little bit more with Sigma lenses, and I think it's...
tends to be the HSM Sigma.
Yeah, I think
lenses.
It has to do with...
lately, that's been fixed.
Reverse engineering the mount as opposed to getting a license to produce it. But generally, they work fine.
You know, my experience with the Sigma EX lenses has been great. I can't complain.
Yeah.
And I know that Tokina and Tamron make some good ones, too.
Yeah.
So don't worry about not having Nikon glass on your Nikon, because it's not a magic.
It's nice, but it's not magic.
Right. Yeah. Okay, last thing of the major topics we want to cover is buying a bag or choosing a bag, or we should say bags.
Yes, emphasis on the plural.
With maybe multiple S's on. because I don't think you get to be an Iconian unless you have at least 6 or 8 bags sitting in your closet, because it's not something that you throw away.
Because they might be useful.
They might
sometime
be useful someday.
In the future.
Yeah. What's? I mean, we have some of the same bags, and we have some different bags.
Right.
I'll go down the list of the stuff that I have because it's a pretty short list. I have a Lowepro Orion AW belt pack that I got to put my old N70 in, which was fine. And I upgraded that to a Lowepro Nature Trekker. And then I discovered the Think Tank Modulus Belt Series and Think Tank Airport Addicted. And that's sort of what I'm using most of the time. But and I also have a Tamrac Velocity 9 sling bag, which fits my D2X and a lens and a flash if I just go on a quickie thing where I just want to have a camera bag and be low profile with it. So I do that. I know you have some of those and some similar ones and even more.
Yeah.
Actually, you have way more.
I'm not going to talk about that.
Okay, so
I'm not going to list what I have.
So
I'll just talk conceptually.
Open the product catalog, and that's what Rick has. Okay, so.
Yeah, I'm not going to list it.
But conceptually speaking, you know, they have different. The reason there's so many bags and the reason why you can't have just one bag is because different bags suit different purposes.
Yeah, very true. And I guess if I look at the stuff I have, it falls into 3 primary categories, although maybe there's a fourth. One of them is shoulder bags. That's probably what I've used the longest. And for those, the ones I gravitate toward are the Domke bags that are very lightweight, made of canvas, not a whole lot of padding. And if you're just taking your camera and a few lenses out...
You're talking about the classic photojournalist bag.
Exactly. Those are fantastic. They're very quick to shoot out of. And if you're not hiking long distances and stuff, they're just plain wonderful. And they've got everything from very small bags that just hold a smaller camera and a couple lenses to ones that are, you know, quite large and easily fit, you know, D2Xs with big lenses on them and several other big lenses in there and all kinds of stuff. And then the backpacks.
Right.
Which are great when you're hauling a fair amount of stuff or even, you know, a little bit smaller amount over an extended distance. And they protect your stuff well. They keep you mobile. And so you don't have problems with balance so much if you're hopping across rocks and things like that, which get to be difficult with a shoulder bag. It's a good way to get yourself hurt. The problem with backpacks is that when you're shooting, you pretty much have to take them off, put them down.
Right, they're a little harder to shoot out of.
Yeah, they're not as quick as a shoulder bag, but certainly for hikes and things like that, they're a good way to go.
And Lord knows you can get a backpack that holds just about everything.
Yeah.
Some of those Lowepro... good Lord, you can put the whole your whole kit in there and still have room for a small child.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I've got ones that start, you know, pretty small and go up to big enough to hurt you, and they do hurt you. You know, one thing I will say is don't overdo it on the size. I think probably if you can get away with something like a Lowepro Mini Trekker or Nature Trekker, try to do it, because when you go up from there with their photo trekker, pro trekker.
You end up overloading it, don't you?
You do. It's very easy to pack too much stuff, more than you need, and then it's just miserable when you're out there shooting and carrying it around. They have their uses, but you know, I try to stay smaller.
Now, the problem that I used to find with the Nature Trekker, it wasn't really a problem, but it was just a challenge, was that with all the padding and all the straps, if I went on a plane with this thing, that took up a lot of space. It was, I wouldn't say I couldn't fit it in the overhead bin because I could, mm-hmm. but you're starting to push the limits of some of the legal carry-on.
Right.
And that wasn't that big of a backpack.
Right.
By the time you have all the, and then I'm still thinking about where does my laptop go, et cetera. And that's where I started moving for when I'm traveling on planes. That's where I thought the think tank line was really
yeah.
good.
Yeah, and that was that third, you know, possibly fourth category where you have the stuff that is kind of like a backpack in a lot of cases. I mean, it's got straps on it, but a little bit different design and not intended for long-distance hiking.
More like luggage.
Right, exactly. And very efficient in terms of what it'll hold. They'll hold a heck of a lot just because of the way that they're designed. And then also the belt system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like the belt system really well, too. I don't like loading it up a whole heck of a lot. I think you tend to put a little bit more on yours than I do
with mine.
Yeah.
Just because I get a little bit overzealous with
yeah.
it.
But I tend to like to go a little bit lighter, maybe combine it with a small backpack or something like that.
That's something I found works quite well is if you have the belt system with a little day pack,
mm-hmm.
that's great. You can have your day pack and throw some stuff in there and then still have the modules. And the belt pack was nice because everything is very accessible.
Yeah.
Because you just stand there and
what I like about it is, you know, what I've done in the past when I was just using a backpack is I'd get to an area where I wanted to do some shooting and I'd take off the backpack because I didn't want to carried around. It was just too darn heavy. And I'd stash it somewhere and then gradually get, you know, things out of there and wander around the area, you know, several hundred feet away from it, you know, shooting and things like that. With a belt system, what's nice is I can have the essentials with me, but leave the rest of the junk back in the backpack or whatever. And that works pretty well.
Or locked away in your car.
Or locked away in the car. Yeah, seriously.
So if you're depending on where you're at, I mean, depending on the remoteness of your location.
Right, because a lot of times...
a backpack lying around is not always a great idea.
No. But a lot of times you have a pretty good sense of what you're going to use mm-hmm. in a certain locale. You know, you're going to know whether or not you're going to use a 12 to 24 lens or a 200 to 400 or whatever in advance. So it makes it fairly easy to leave stuff back.
And with airlines being what they are these days, you know, it's hard to... carry your stuff with you. I would say everybody I talk to photography-wise pretty much tries to carry on as much of equipment as they can.
Yeah.
I mean, when I fly, I want to have that stuff with me.
Yeah, the one exception for me is the tripod.
Yeah, me too.
I'll usually stick that inside a checked bag wrapped up pretty well and closed.
Right. It's not worth it to me to carry the tripod. I figure it can survive in my regular luggage. But you know, so having something and that's where these bags that have wheels or rollers mm-hmm. can come in handy. Some of them now are being designed to meet the requirements for the regional jets. Mm-hmm. I know you got one that does that.
Right.
Or the international requirements, which are a little bit more stringent than the domestic USA carry-on requirements. The biggest problem a lot of times with the international airlines is weight.
Right.
They'll actually weigh your stuff. So that's where you want to be able to split your stuff up into multiple containers so that one giant bag is not a good idea. But if you have two smaller ones that you can give to somebody else, one of them while you're checking in at the gate, and then they hand it back to you, usually you can circumvent the rules that way.
Right.
So there's a lot of things out there. The important thing always to consider is, you know, what do you have in your kit? What do you find yourself bringing and how do you anticipate using? You know, are you mostly flying on planes? Or are you mostly just putting it in the back of your car? And if you're working out of a car, then what you said in the beginning, one of those photojournalist classic shoulder bags, boy, those are really easy to deal with
because
mm-hmm. they're so accessible.
Yep.
I wouldn't want a belt system if I'm working out of a vehicle. You know, if I was on a safari or something like that where I knew I wasn't getting out and walking around much.
No.
So now the good news is that we have a What Bag FAQ article that our very own JRP wrote, and that's on the site, and I'll post a link to that on the show notes page.
Yeah, it's a very good reference.
So all kinds of stuff, and you know, you've heard us talk about all kinds of different things.
I guess you know, a couple other things I was thinking about before we wrap up the topic. If you can, definitely try putting some of your own equipment or mm-hmm. stuff just like your equipment in the bag before you make a commitment. There are still a lot of bags out there that aren't designed well for some of the bigger lenses and camera bodies that have been around the last 10 years. You know, the ones with the 77 millimeter size filters.
Right, or 70 to 200 type lens.
Right. And bags that you think would work fine actually won't fit your equipment. Mm-hmm. And it's a more common thing than you would think. So if you can, definitely get an opportunity to test drive it. That's one of those situations where buying the bag locally can be a really good idea.
Yeah, I like to do that.
Right.
I like to at least try it out and see, because I want to know. Like, I'll give you an example. When I bought that sling bag, that Tamrac, I brought my D2X to my local shop, and I said, okay, here's this with a lens. Will it fit in there?
Right.
Yes, it will. Okay, then I can get it.
Yeah, and it's a good opportunity to help out the local, locally owned stores with the purchase, too, because they have a hard time.
Mm. And, yeah, I've even seen some of our local stores aren't even carrying the major name brands on bags anymore. So I think in interest of margin, but you never know. But check out the article. Consider how much stuff you have. Understand that the more stuff you put in it, the heavier this thing is going to be. Just because it holds everything that you have in your kit
doesn't mean you need to take it.
Doesn't always make the most sense. You could tip over under the weight.
Yeah. Or more importantly, you could find yourself tiring out prematurely.
Yeah.
And just not taking photos.
Well, also
that you would have otherwise.
Consider like with a backpack, you know, how big your torso is. Some of these low pro bags, for example, have adjustable height shoulder straps where they are designed to fit a variety of torso sizes. But if you're a small person and you get the biggest bag they make, you might be it might not fit you. So that's something again where you'd want to try that on and make sure it fits in the store before you buy it.
Yep.
Okay, so that's our foray into bags. You can never have just one.
No, and you won't.
And I'm sure I'll buy another one this year.
Yeah.
So
speaking of this year.
This year.
New Year's resolutions.
I was telling you I didn't have any, but that's not true. I
mean, right.
I just haven't thought them through.
Well, you have
way.
One at least.
Yeah, my biggest resolution is to get the heck out of the mountain lair once in a while.
Yeah.
And try to go shooting.
Yeah, and that's a good one for me too. I've done all right, but I haven't done nearly as much as I would like.
So. Yeah, there's some places I want to hit. Like, I still need to go maybe this summer to go to the Great Sand Dunes.
Mm-hmm.
out here in Colorado and some of these other places. And I already know I'm going on the ANPAT next year, so that's a good one. I know I've got a week in Yellowstone.
Yeah, interestingly, there's been another session added the week before.
No kidding.
So
I didn't even see that. I guess I haven't been on the site long enough.
Now, I didn't
Shame
look really
on me.
Closely on that one. I know there was a fairly extensive waiting list, so it very well could have filled up already. I'm not sure.
Wow.
But if you were interested in that, you might take a look.
Yeah, that would be under the ANPAT's forums, under the travel section in the Nikonians forum.
Yeah, but it was amazing how popular that turned out to be.
Well, some sites are... I know I've been wanting to go to Yellowstone for a long time. So
yeah, no, it's a great place. We're also going to hit the Teton, so two wonderful locations. I guess for me, in addition to just getting out there more often, there are a few things that I have on my to-do list photographically. One is I want to do more black and white work, and that's both digitally and in terms of film. I've been playing a little bit with scanning lately, with black and white film, and going to do a little bit more of that over the next couple months here. So we may talk a little bit more about that and some things I've learned in that process.
I did make a black and white print, actually, from my new printer.
Well, black and white is awfully cool. And, it's funny. I used to do a fair amount of it and really enjoyed it and did darkroom work and things like that and got away from it. And with digital making black and white so darn easy, I started getting interested in it and again. And then that led me to start getting interested in black and white film again. So it's funny how that
works.
It
goes around, comes around.
Yeah, it does. So I think I'm going to do a little bit of medium format black and white work, actually. So that's one thing. And related to that is just, maybe a little bit more with film again for a little while, especially the medium format realm. I mentioned that in the previous podcast, and it is fun. I do enjoy doing that at times.
Makes you stop and think about your photo for a minute because you got to you're shooting a piece of film that cost you money.
Yeah, but I think sometimes after getting used to digital for a while, we start thinking, well, how in the world did we ever do that with film? And the answer is, it was pretty easy. It's not hard to get well-exposed images, you know, even with slide film that has pretty narrow latitude. So it's fun stuff. So that's on my list of things to do. How about you? Any other?
Well, I want to experiment some more with some panoramic photos.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I got that pano base plate.
Yep.
That pano clamp that Really Right Stuff makes to put on my ball head. So I want to test that out because
mm-hmm.
it's really nicely made and, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, you'll have to tell us more about that.
And with the big printer that I got,
episode.
You know, that's one way of increasing your resolution. Take landscapes with a longer focal length and do panoramic stuff. So I want to play with that. I need to get out and do I have to plan a wildlife adventure. It's been too long since I've had the big glass out,
mm-hmm.
pretty much since we went to Texas.
Oh, that is too long.
So in terms of anything serious.
Right.
And because there's just some stuff didn't work out this year on that front. So I want to do some more of that. But I'm thinking about that. And mostly. And
we
I
still
also
need to do the mountain goats.
We got to do that.
But that'll have to right. be in the summer.
And then I want to dabble a little bit in really basic, and I mean basic, studio portrait setup. Not to build a studio, but maybe outdoor portrait type stuff. I picked up some PhotoFlex domes, the little ones that fit, and some light stands, and I'm going to be attaching some SB800s with the wireless
mm-hmm.
ITTL. And, you know, that wireless... The wireless creative lighting system that Nikon's got has got to be...
It is very cool.
In terms of photographic advances in the last few... You know, we don't mention it much, but my goodness, it is so easy to use. Once you figure out some basic settings, it is so powerful and so cool that I wasn't going to say cool this entire podcast, and I just screwed it up.
You were going to say awesome.
Yeah, it was gnarly. What's a better descriptive word? But it is so powerful.
Audacious.
Ooh.
Yeah,
and the possibilities, just once you start playing with it, it's really interesting. So I wanna experiment with that a little mm-hmm. bit more this year too, and then the other resolution I know that both of us have is one of these days we are going to figure out an honest to God image cataloging system.
Oh yeah,
and sit down and maybe apply some metadata that we always talk about but we never really do.
Well, I do it periodically.
And
yeah,
it's a good thing.
True.
And here's another resolution. I'm going to go through all these downloads of pictures that I got and start purging out the junk.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy with Photo Mechanic to just
those
delete
are,
the blurry ones. And then that's the easiest way to save yourself some hard drive space, is just start deleting the real junk pictures that aren't necessary.
Yeah, those are both very good resolutions, because certainly I need to get my images organized better. It's not terrible, but it's building up. And
right.
that I do really need to get a handle on. I've got iView Media Pro on my
computer.
Didn't
they just get bought by Microsoft?
They did, yeah.
So I don't know where that's going to go.
That'll make you happy as a Mac user, I'm sure. Somehow.
Well, it's you never know what they're going to do with it.
Yeah.
They have this tendency of buying something and then making it go away or
yeah,
wait, making
know.
You wait. Because it'll be in Vista 2011.
Yeah, but they have good stuff too. So
yeah.
I have started using that a little bit and loading things in there, but I need to get it organized better. And then I've got some things I want to do on my website in terms of
speaking
redoing
of that,
it.
I want to write more articles for my website, and I should point out I wrote one.
Oh yeah,
up yesterday.
Yeah, it was a good one too.
I've posted it over in the D1, D2.
Yeah,
forum.
It kind of came out of some of the discussions that we had.
Right,
and
this
tests.
Article was based on a lot of the feedback that Rick and I have had, and working with the D2X for now almost 2 years for me at least, not quite. Is a summary of everything I've learned about the CAM 2000 autofocus system. And that can be reached from the articles link that's on my website, luminescentphoto.com, and have some example pictures in there. And part of it I incorporated was the feedback I got from actually talking to Nikon reps, Nikon professional
right.
guys, and that when I was at the sports workshop. So we've covered some of this stuff if you've been a regular listener of these podcasts. And I put it all on.
Yeah, we've talked about it, but it captures
never
it,
put it
all
on
in
paper,
one place,
so
and it's pretty succinct and easy to read.
Yeah,
so.
It's not too long of an article, but
yeah.
it's I think it's a nice companion to Digital Daryl's articles on the Nikonian
right.
site.
Also very good resources.
I'm not trying to
you ideally want to read both.
That. Yeah. It's because he's got a lot of good stuff in terms of the nitty gritty details of all the custom functions and
right.
stuff like that.
Right.
It's really, really good. So I did that and I hope to write some more articles.
And
on
I suspect someone could buy a copy of your NX book there too, right?
I'll let you use your own discretion on that. Because our shameless self promotion.
No, it's a
and
good
speaking
book.
Of shameless self promotion, before we leave you here, we are looking for three more brave volunteers who are interested in going down to Texas with us in May.
Right.
So if you're interested, we need to hear from you before the end of January, because we need to get a deposit from you. Send us an email. I'll send you the information. But the dates on the trip are, I think, May 10th through 13th, approximately. Let me just look at my calendar here. May 10th, which is a Thursday, through the 13th, out of McAllen, Texas, which is way south Texas. We'll be shooting
way, way south.
Two full days in private property. So if you listen to our podcast about that and you want to spend, Rick and I are both going to be there. We're limiting the enrollment to four people. So you're going to have a lot of hands-on time. If you want to shoot birds and raptors and all kinds of...
Photograph them, yeah.
Yeah, machine gun them. We're going to be doing that. So we're looking for interested volunteers. So let us know if you're interested. We can tell you how much it's going to cost and what you got to do to join
yeah,
us.
And you get to experience our indescribable wit and charm, you know, both of those things.
Not to mention our smashing good looks.
And lack of hair. Okay.
All right, well, let's leave you with our tip of the month. We both brainstormed the same exact idea.
Yeah, it was amazing. Now, let's talk about how this came up.
Oh. Wait, oh, because I got a new laptop, and I tried to calibrate the screen with my Monaco Optics, and you have a Spider Pro, too.
Right.
Both do the same darn thing.
Yeah.
And I was just getting it, and it looked green to my... I mean, and I know that that's not... I don't care what the calibration profile says. If it looks green, I'm not that colorblind. There was something wrong, especially because I could compare it to the monitor I have here.
Right.
And this works for LCD monitors in general, but laptops especially. And the tip is, if you're going to calibrate this...
And this was my response. Turn off all the lights.
Do it in the dark.
And do it at night,
yeah.
if you can.
So I did. And the next thing I knew, I had a really good profile.
Yeah.
Something that, you know, I think... In general, it's hard to calibrate the monitor, the display of a laptop. I mean, you're never going to get the same brightness and the same kind of clarity that you have with the big powered LCDs or CRTs that you have on. But you can get pretty darn close if you follow that little tip.
But it's just a good guideline in general if you're using one of those... tools to profile your monitor. And by the way, if you don't have one of those things, get one.
Yeah.
It'll make a huge difference in your prints.
Yeah, that's a good investment of a couple hundred bucks, like $200.
I always do mine at night when it's dark out. I turn off all the lights in that room, shut the door, let it crank away because it takes about 15, 20 minutes to go through its process.
Oh, really? It takes that long?
Yeah.
I guess the Monaco software only takes about 5 minutes.
Is that right?
Maybe 10.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah, with the Spider, it's a little bit longer than that. Not a problem.
Part of it depends on the brightness of your monitor.
Yeah, but since you don't have to be there, it's not a big deal.
Nope.
It's all automated.
Yep.
But turn off the lights, and you'll get much, much better results.
Smashing, baby.
Smashing. Yes.
Smashing.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. That's what I'll say next time instead of cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think...
That'll be on the New Year's resolution list.
Don't say
cool. Say brilliant.
There you go. I'm down with that.
All right.
Well, that's the end of the 2006 edition of the Image Doctors.
Because
our next episode won't be until January of 2007.
Yep. One thing that we're going to do sometime here soon, and maybe we can wedge it in before the next episode, maybe not, is we're going to make a field trip to a place called the Butterfly Emporium up between Denver and Boulder, Colorado. It's basically an indoor area, lots of plants, tons of butterflies, and we're going to shoot some macro stuff with the R1 C1 flash system and talk to you a little bit about how that went and show you some pictures and all that kind of stuff. So sometime soon that we'll get that in. And anything else that you want to say, Jason?
Nope. I was just looking at the calendar to see when our next scheduled episode was, which is 4th of January.
Yeah, it's coming soon.
So we'll do that. So in the meantime, everyone, I want everybody out there on our behalf to have a really happy holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Be safe out there. It's okay to eat too much and drink too much as long as you're safe about it. Don't drive home drunk.
Yep.
And
don't go crazy and buy any Canon gear or anything like that, you know.
God forbid.
Yeah.
And, you know, friends don't let friends do drive drunk or buy Canon. So it's all good. No, we're just kidding. But, well, we're serious about the drunk part. Yeah. So
and the Canon stuff.
Enjoy the eggnog. Enjoy your Christmas ham or whatever you might be doing. And we'll see you next year.
Yep. Bye-bye.